and talk about pretty much how did you start in business, what your history is like, give us some of the things, the roadmaps us youngsters need to know in order to be a true champion in business. So we're here at the 6th Annual Business Summit in Melbourne, Florida, and I'm sitting with two of the greatest minds that I can actually be enlightened by. Ernie Chu is one individual, and Gil Dasso, who is phenomenal at giving wisdom where wisdom is granted.
I second that.
Hallelujah. You guys are the kings.
Oh, let me tell you.
They give me my expertise.
You just have a wonderful heart that we just got to mention as often as we can, because so often in business we don't see people with a good heart all the time. And we get jaded, we get disappointed, but you have never disappointed. You have always came to the rescue and provided a solution.
This is a high bar, isn't it, Ernie?
Of course, but we
adhere to the high bar?
Ernie Chu is one of those individuals who I look at as a very high mentor for me, because he's taken companies to the level that I want to take companies to one day, and that's at the IPO level. So he's raised capital, he has recently gotten married, so we're all happy for...
Really, like, amazing.
Amazing, amazing. So for him to find happiness and take IPOs to the public market and win, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I wanted to find out from Ernie, how did he start, and were there any journeys along the way that he could share? Tell us a little about his background.
Well, you want to know how I started, and
yes.
And part of it is to start to really have some ideas about maybe what you'd like to do, even if those ideas eventually are going to be shifting.
Yes.
So I started out by thinking I was going to write the great American novel, and I was going to be a writer, maybe because my grandfather thought I was going to be a writer, and he was a famous psychic. So I still may be a very good, and it's not over yet.
Oh, it's still up to me.
So I ended up, I thought to myself, maybe I should be writing or doing something in terms of working for a newspaper.
Yes.
The only issue was that I had never worked for a newspaper. I didn't even work in my college for a newspaper. Yeah. I had written several articles when I was doing. I was in India. I was my junior year in India. So I had an adventure, and the adventure was that I was probably one of the few people in my generation that went to Vietnam as a tourist.
Get out. While Oh my gosh, that's a terrible.
That's before the Tet Offensive.
Yeah, it was the year before the Tet Offensive.
Yes.
But the U.S. was saying that there really wasn't a war there. So they were still issuing visas.
Yes.
So I got a tourist visa, not only to Vietnam, but to Cambodia.
What gave you the desire to go there?
I wanted to see what was happening.
Exactly.
You know, and you're 19 years old, and you think you're indestructible.
Invincible.
Yeah. You know it all.
Yeah, that's right.
And this was during a time that you were in college.
Yeah, I was. I went to Amherst College in Massachusetts, and I got a little restless, and I decided I want to take my junior year abroad. So I transferred to the University of Wisconsin, and they had a college year in India program.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So I ended up being in a language immersion, learned Hindi Urdu. I've forgotten most of it, but I could read and write it at about a sixth grade level. And basically got a real understanding of Indian culture. I'm not saying that Indian food is my favorite food. I don't do spice really well.
Well, it takes a huge palate in order to enjoy heavy spices.
So I happened to be sitting next to, on the last day of college as I was graduating, not certain what I was going to do, probably thinking I was going to graduate school, not overly really enthused about what I was studying, which was Far Eastern history.
And that was your major?
Yeah, well, it was my major. It was an easy, I liked history and I...
You took the easy route out? Is that what you said?
It was relatively easy, yeah. I and I was interested in it. And so I sat next to a woman at a dinner. This was kind of the president of the college was holding a dinner for some of the, my father had designed the library, so they were, he was invited and I was invited. And I sat next to a woman who I had no idea who she was. And she asked me more like, young man, what are you gonna do after college? What do you wanna do? And I said, I wanted to write. I wanted to be a writer. I talked to her about how much I enjoyed it and what I was doing. And at the end of the dinner, she said, well, I might be able to help you. I know the Kirby family who owns the Wall Street Journal. I know the managing editor of McCall magazine. Maybe I'll make some calls for you.
Yes.
Now, she didn't ask me, you know, what's your writing qualifications? She had never seen anything that I wrote. She just said, I believe in you, and I want to help you. And so she made the calls. And about 6 months later, I was at the Wall Street Journal as a reporter. Now you got to remember this. Well, that's the point I'm making is that ordinarily. English and journalism as an undergraduate, you'd probably have to go to Columbia School of Journalism if you could get in. Otherwise, take a journalism major or postgrad, get an internship on summers working newspapers, etc. And I didn't have any of that. All I had was some articles I wrote about what life was about India, what it was like being in the demilitarized zone in Korea. I went to Panmunjom as a student, wrote about what it was like there, and so forth. And basically, here I was working at the Wall Street Journal. I had an interest in finance. I knew the difference between a stock and a bond.
That's a step in the right direction.
Considering I wrote the bond column and I was all 21 or 22 years old, and here I am writing about the bond column. People are doing billions of dollars based on what I'm saying in this column. And if they knew that there was like a 22-year-old kid that just joined there, they would cancel their subscription in the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, my gosh. Now, that must be super high. Writing bonds.
Well, and I'm going to say that there might have been a few other situations like that in this particular realm since then, with younger, smarter, you know, just like you, a genius.
Yeah, there are quite a few, and it's a question of who you know. If you have your choice of who you know versus what your qualifications are, go with who you know every time.
Yeah. How long were you in
that? Oh, that is great advice.
How long were you in that position, and how did you make the transition now that you're getting all of this financial knowledge to really getting a company to go to that level?
Well, where it came from was that I was writing about financing businesses.
Yes.
So the first thing was that I happened to be there at the time when they had one of the great IPO markets, a really great IPO market. At 5 and open, you know.
That's
It was a little bit of a bubble, but I was writing about it, I had some fun doing things like that because H.G. Parks, the first black company, went public, and then more Park Sausages Mom.
Yes,
so I wrote a feature on that, and I interviewed H.G. Parks, and I would do things like there was a company that went public. It was going to be a very hot issue. I don't even know what they did. It was called National Tape Distributors. Anyway, it's coming out of Wisconsin.
Okay. So I call up.
And of course, the thing
comes at 5 and opens, I think, at 35. Uh-huh. I mean, that's pretty good. 7 to 10.
Rags to
riches.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I call up to get a comment from the
director of securities for the state of Wisconsin, And somebody inadvertently, tells me that he's on a fishing trip.
Yes.
Which I then went into the Wall Street Journal about how this company went public. It came at 7, had no earnings, no nothing. Went to the what came out at 35, and the director of securities went fishing.
I bet somebody got fired.
The gatekeepers went
out. Oh my goodness.
So anyway, you learn a lot about how companies are funded, and you also realize that you rarely, to even go public once,
yes,
it's a great honor, and you can't ever take that too lightly, because not that many people. How many people, in fact, even get the opportunity when somebody says, "Hey, Devon, we're going to give you $1 million to do this center or whatever it is, make us proud."
Yes.
How many people actually ever get that opportunity to get that?
Very
And then, of course, you've done more than that. You've actually, you were motivated enough to really take it real seriously, and you got good at it.
We're not even nowhere near yet.
Of course.
This is why I'm highly enlightened by both of you who have raised capital, who have created businesses, because now individuals like me who need questions answered as to, okay, now how do I steer this roadmap in a direction that's going to give me the best, not only the best valuation, so I don't have that similar story of starting at 7, going to 35, and then going fishing, even though I might have that in my mind mentally. Now I have a mentor in both of you.
Well, and us and you.
And it's true that we're here for each other. So one of my questions to you is, right now in this environment, what would you tell young people? How would you instruct them to get their ideas in play? How could you help them become experts?
Well, the two things are, I think, financial literacy is really important from an educational standpoint. And even if it seems a little dull, it's very useful to turn on Bloomberg. It's
yes.
very useful to once in a while read Fortune or Business Week or
things of that type. And even if you don't know all the words,
you start to get the flavor of it. And you find that it can be fun because it translates into
real money. And the other thing is that it opens up a whole aspect of prosperity and abundance that you had no idea really that existed. Because really, true wealth and true ability to get flow is created.
Yes.
It's created.
Yes. And that's what you write about.
But you create it inside of you before it actually is created in the material world. That's really what it comes down to. So
the idea
comes first, and then as you go along, there are supplemental ideas and things that support that.
Don't
be afraid to ever not have an idea, or that you don't have the total solution, because it's coming. You're not
yes.
going to get stuck halfway.
Yes.
Wow.
Now, as an investor who trades on the markets constantly these days, I find my whole lifestyle has changed since I've started. I now like to watch the Bloomberg coming in from 3 a.m. in the morning to watch the London Open, because we know all markets are affected.
It's partly the casino aspects of the market. What I saw at the Wall Street Journal was that, hey, I can start a company, and if it's really got a big future,
I'll pay
1/10 of a mil.
Yes.
Which is a 1/10 of a 1/10 of a cent.
Yes.
I'll do the next round at
maybe
50 cents.
That's a big
jump from one mil.
That's a big jump. And then it goes public at 5.
So, now
I'm sitting with hundreds of thousands of shares that I've
paid relatively modest amounts of money for.
But
I have to be able to have a big idea.
Yes. So that's what it comes down to.
Yes.
People want big ideas, and they'll buy things on spec
just like you're buying the aspects that maybe that stock will go up
an eighth of a point and keep going. You know? So
that's what everybody hopes for.
Yeah, but also people buy
hope.
Yeah, and there's no place in the world other than the United States where you can take somebody and say, look, we have this
biotech gene, and we figured out how to splice it, and it's going to cure a certain form of cancer. You know, we're going to value our company at $600 million or $500 million or something of that type. Or you can do enough things to actually cause that value to go up, because there are
some things that people arbitrarily assign values to. Yeah. And so those are the kinds of things that people should, I find them very exciting. People
like Robert
Kiyosaki would look at me and say, you're kind of taking big chances. But at the same time,
you know, you have opportunities. It's different strokes for different folks. And I like high risk, but I don't think of them as high risk. I think of it as bringing in something that hasn't been done before.
And just because it hasn't been done
doesn't mean it can't be done. And
that's it. Value.
Yep. And
that's it.
Value.
So those are the kinds of things that I would
suggest to people. That's why you would want to go public, as an example.
Yes.
Because, you know, right now there's so many negatives and so many expenses about going public.
But and the at the moment, I would say that
the atmosphere is that
regulators have
made it very difficult for small companies
to go public and to get any kind of support
from the financial community. Everything's become
institutional and trading and things of that type.
Uh-oh. Okay?
Yes. Coughing here a little
bit. I think you went to get some hot.
So, Ernie, you know, I've known you for a long time and I watch you. I think you are a very interesting man. Across the board, you have the spiritual, financial aspect, which, you know, is the secret, right?
I believe so. I think at the end of the day, the spiritual energy that you have, what you bring into this life, is really the essence. You can't take, you can take love with you, you can take your essence with you, you can't take money with you.
Money's
nothing more than a symbol anyway.
Right.
It's a symbol and agreement.
And the symbols and agreements change so fast.
You know, your head would spin. And that's what they call
the currency market.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Forex and currency and everything.
Yeah.
They change,
you know, all the time.
Thousands
of times per second.
Exactly. So, what's the next move for you? Now that you've settled down,
I'm looking for the next big idea.
Well, did you just bring to market a business, a company?
No,
we haven't. I started
one in
2010 on the back of an envelope, literally. On the back of an envelope. I like envelopes better than napkins.
So I can stick them. I can stick them in my
jacket
pocket.
Well, and you're like eight times value, or eight times, the way you explained it to me the last time we talked about it, it was 50 cents a share, and now it's...
Well, what it is we took a company that we took a concept. We can
provide solar energy, but so can zillions of people.
Sure.
So what was our concept? Our concept was, let's look at how the United States was built. It was built by small to medium-sized
communities, and basically companies like Walmart,
basically Wendy's, Holiday Inns,
all kinds of Petri stores. They all started in small to medium-sized towns with ordinary citizens, the people.
It's really middle America.
That's how these, you know,
it's only
recently that Walmart got into these big box stores.
And they haven't done that well with the big box stores. They have to close.
When it was the sort of the town's department store, that was it. So we wanted to
make solar energy generation, the town's
solar green energy.
And that they would ordinarily not have any access to it, because whoever, whatever, they would
leave it up to the even at some point, not
certainly not in Florida, not from Sulphur. And so we were able to persuade the towns that they should
basically let us have
a piece of land, lease it from them, and pay the farmers.
Instead of growing corn, they would grow solar energy.
And they'd make us much money, and it wouldn't be as
unsightly because corn grows higher than
solar panels. And essentially,
we then had a connection up there that we can connect to the grid, and also we had an ability to make a deal with the utility. So, because the utility doesn't care whether they just want to buy the electricity on a large scale basis. So they would give us 15 to 20 year contracts, mm-hmm. because in
that kind of a business,
in order to know what your future needs are going to be, they look out 20 years, sometimes 25 years.
So it's nice to be in a business where there are
incentives to the government's giving you incentives.
The utilities are signing long-term contracts. You don't have to set up a customer service department. You only
have one customer.
That's your utility, and
basically, the town gets credit because it's getting
green energy, and they're doing their best to
do it. There are 3,000
so
of them.
The
yeah. Now there are 3,000 of them, and if we had 50 of them, it would be $1 billion in assets.
So that's the big idea.
What was your best business deal that you've ever done in your entire life?
Well, the best
deal I did. I gave a talk at work, and at the end of the talk about finance, because I never went to business school, so they asked me to talk at Wharton, so I did, and basically somebody came up to me in class and said, well, you know, he's going to at some point own a baseball team, and he's going to do this and that and whatever, and I said, good. I didn't want to really burst his bubble. And one day, he talked to me, called me up, and he said, I was the Chinese kid that came up and wanted to do that. And I wanted you to know that we started the company and whatever. So I looked at it. I was
really impressed because he had done.
I figured he was kind of just going to show me a plan. He actually showed me financials, and he was actually profitable. You know, he had close to $1 million.
So I went, I was supposed to meet him.
So I showed up at his house, and I was up on the hill, and his house is down there. And I got there early, and this big truck pulls up, and they take, and there's no cars in his garage. There's millions of dollars of inventory in his garage. And I thought, wow, this guy's pretty serious. Anyway, I said, listen, I'll help you. Give me 10% of the company, and I'll get you the money that you need, and I'll be on the board, and I'll do whatever it is. And within 2 years, he was doing $22 million, and we got bought out by a large a Canadian System House of Canada, and basically a public company. And
that's a remarkable story.
And it happened so quickly.
Now I'm going to have to say that's. Because of the relationships you have.
Yeah, well, it's all about relationships,
yeah,
and that's
absolutely.
All I do is, you know, a lot of what I do, even when I try to arrange a trip to Brazil, these are all relationships that I have, or if I need more people, I call people who know people and talk to them, and you know, I'm very blessed because people welcome those relationships, and I do my best to honor them.
You're the resident genius.
That's a perception.
True, but it works.
Now, what's your outlook for the financial future of our country?
Well, I think the capitalist system is going to continue to grow. The issue that has to change, and I do think it is changing, and I think people like Mark Jones are helping to change it. Is that there has to be enough support for small to medium-sized companies and enough financial outlets to, for instance, like the stock market, and being able to have a market separate for small to medium-sized companies. It doesn't exist today because the regulators came in and they absolutely took everybody who was really the top bottom three or four tiers that supported these startups and things of that type. They put them out of business pretty much. The institutions took over. It became a very institutionalized market. And only companies that had very, very big ideas, you know, like Elon Musk, you know, stuff, and like some of the biotech companies, the only ones that were able to find large amounts of capital because they were valued at such high valuations. You know, the average company that might, for instance, have a breakthrough in medical instrumentation, they didn't have a chance. And now I think this is going to change. I think they're going to have more and more of a two-tier market, and there'll be more opportunities available to, and eventually you're going to have a public market.
Yes. Nice. Oh, I love to hear that. So, I know we don't have a lot of time, but can I ask a question?
Please, by all means.
AI.
Sure.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that that's been around for quite some time. I mean, but I think that eventually you're going to get software that's so sophisticated that it will start to mimic and probably exceed human logic. It will be like probably having the intuition of Captain Kirk and the logic of Spock, and I think that that's what you would eventually have. And I think also
is that why we need to get to the moon?
To Mars.
But to find Spock?
To escape Spock. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
But I think that I think the next big thing is going to be, virtual reality. And people are going to, and when you consider that most of what we have anyway is virtual,
sure.
And we think it's real, but it's virtual, that it's not unusual. And then you marry AI with it, and then now you've got the holodeck, and you've got all the other things.
Well, that's what Elon said the other day. His statement was, "We're probably just characters in a video game." And my answer to that was, "Well, if that's true, would you please take me to the next level?
Yeah,
I'm ready to go." So, you know, it's like the parallel universe versus, are we in the blade of grass? Are we, you know, is our galaxy being stepped on by, you know, the,
yeah,
the pasture?
Yeah. Well, that's...
So now with such a colorful history, would you do anything different?
Well, I had always thought of myself as saying, well, I learned some lessons this way. But I think that everything was there in a way that once I made up my mind to make decisions or set the general path, that it kind of, the doors opened and the path unfolded. I may not have thought that was the best thing for me at the time, but as I looked at it, I don't think I would have done too many things differently. I think there are some times that I wish I had been kinder. I wish I had been more loving. I wish I had been more understanding. But I learned also that that's also a learning process, and that I did learn that, because I don't make those same mistakes again, and I take time to really give the humanness a really important understanding of how that really works in your life, and not just getting things done or getting things accomplished or who you know or things of that type.
You're talking about compassion.
Well, compassion and some of the, and a lot of that stuff actually turns out to be, you can directly link it to your next steps.
Nice.
You know, people, you have your own brand, for instance.
Yes.
And even though when you talk about brand, it tends to oversimplify how people see you. But in a certain way, you know, we are all, you know, spiritually guided in on certain paths. I don't think it's predestined, but I think that the consequences and the possibilities change as you make decisions and.
This has been one wonderful time.
You're an amazing man.
If someone, I know you don't probably take on every client. What is your ideal client before we wrap up, and how can they reach you?
Well, I can be reached simply by calling me at 561-315-6311. It's on my website.
And that is?
And your website is?
www.soulcurrency.com. Now, I have a coaching website, www.ernestchu.com, but that's going to be probably integrated website at some point.
Well, this has been one lovely hour with Ernie Chu.
Thank you.
I'm Gail DeHassel. Is there any last remarks you want to leave with us, Gail?
No, Ernie is the master.
Ernie, leave us with a last remarks.
Well, I think that having you two here as really guides to others around, and having gone through what you've all gone through, including the path that you've taken, it's really quite an inspiration how you've really not only been doing good by giving back, but really being able to do well by doing good.
Yes.
And that's really an important distinction. And I think it's a real credit to both of you and who you are that you're you're giving of your time, because you could be out there playing golf on one of Trump's courses.
It's true. Gail is taking me on Sunday.
Plus, you're newlywed. You're starting a new married life. I'm just excited for you.
Yeah.
It's another facet, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's something that you've been wanting. I see that.
So. Yeah.
I had just about given up. I figured, okay, if I never find anybody that I'd want to marry, then okay.
See, it happens that way, right? When you're ready to exit, boom, the good stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, this has been one beautiful time with two beautiful people. Thank you once again, Devon Dames out from Devon Dames International.
Great. Well, thank you.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, that was beautiful.